Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and, wow, I feel like after last night's program, my brain got turned inside out. I don't think I've ever done a three-hour filibobster before, but many of you responded to it positively, and I appreciate that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. We like to call what we do here Conversation Radio. It happens 3 hours a night, Monday through Friday, beginning about this time. This time being 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening to the rerun stream at some other time, this is not live. But it's available to you. Well, it's a different model. A lot of people out there charge for what they do. God knows, well... Anyway, no, it's available however you care to listen. It's available as a podcast at WhiteRoseSociety.org and iTunes. The stream itself is available at iTunes Radio, and the stream is available at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The stream is available at Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, and mercy sakes, lots and lots of other platforms of which I may not even be aware. If there's one you're aware of and I'm not, do let me know. You can listen at home. You can listen via your smartphone. That means you can listen in your car, going to work, coming from work, out running around, running errands. There's no place that the horn can't go or shouldn't go. And hopefully, in light of the fact, as I said, that last night was a three-hour filibobster, we will, in fact, engage in a little bit of honest-to-God conversation. You know, the conversation like in Conversation Radio. We'll engage in some of that this evening, I hope. Let's see. Where to begin this evening? I deliberately did not mention it until late in the broadcast last night. But we'll get started and get this out of the way, and hopefully, a word to the wise will be sufficient. We had four kind contributions last night during the program, and, I had a note from, Kate on the Front Range, after the show, saying that tonight was the last night, she said, tonight was the best show ever. You know, that's how we spell ever now, E-V-A-H. She also said for me to go on, because I have to be reminded from time to time, she said, drive home the notion that we are in a financial hole, which we are, and that we have bills that have to be paid tomorrow, lest, among other things, the toll-free number go away. It's not for lack of paying the bills, it's for lack of having anything to pay the bills with. And that's where y'all come in, because this is all listener-supported. It is, this happens because of your determination for this radio experiment, to continue. Plain and simple. So if you would like, and if you can, and note, you know, this is if you can, not you must. Well, we're beginning June anew. And that means we have to raise, well, we didn't raise it during the month of May, so we have to raise, we try every month to raise $2,500. We missed the mark in May. We missed the mark in April. We missed the mark in March. And we are getting ourselves into rather an ugly hole. And that, frankly, threatens the continued existence of the program from one month to the next, because that's how we operate, from one month to the next. I have been asked by Dr. John in New York if I would please, on his behalf, issue a challenge. He said he will match the first contributions equaling $50 that come in this evening, so that would make it a total of $100. And we are $10 toward meeting that challenge. That happened even as I spoke. So $40 more, and we will have met Dr. John's challenge for this evening and be in a little bit better position. But we are in we're in dire straits in light of the, and please understand, I think about this kind of thing, but it's not being included in all of this. I sat down last night and tallied up everything from the Great Belgian Backpack Heist, and the losses out of that came to, and that was not personal stuff, so a good bit of that was horn equipment that I'd hoped to use to at least create some podcasts in my absence during May, because I knew I was going to be gone so long. But that comes up to about $2,500 worth of equipment in its own right. Yeah, but that's not the purpose of this fundraising solicitation. It is simply to get the bills paid, and that's where we are. And we need to raise a significant sum by tomorrow evening. Otherwise, we're back to just toll calling, and the we'll pay the freight toll free number goes away, at least until the bill gets paid. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address. It's right there on the main page, or you can click the tab that says Contribute, and you'll find all of the relevant information there as well. Thanks to those of you who have contributed in the month of June. Most of you, all of you, are people who contribute regularly, and your contributions are very, very much appreciated, not just by me and not just by the all-volunteer staff that makes the horn go, but by people who cannot, for a variety of reasons, contribute, and therefore it is you who makes the program available for them. This is an exercise in not compulsory consumerism, but voluntary advocacy, I guess. Yeah. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and the PayPal button thereat, as well as the snail mail address, and that would help in a big way if we could take a bite out of it. Because remember, we've had a challenge on the table from our buddy Scott in Sweden for months now, an offer to kick extra money into the kitty in a month in which we actually make the fundraising goal. So far, our buddy Scott in Sweden has not had to reach for his wallet in the Beat the Swede challenge. Just saying. But that's, and thanks very much, Marty. He says, you filibobster very well. Don't fear doing it again. Well, I don't fear it. It's just a matter of, I wanted to make sure I got as much of the story told last night as I humanly possibly could. And I think I still missed out on some stuff. But like I said, I feel like my brain got turned inside out, and I'm not sure what I forgot to tell you. I mean, I could tell you about the beauty of that garden with the late spring or mid-spring sun filtering through the leaves of the ancient trees. I wish I could paint. I do, because my head writer David in Tennessee, is a photographer of considerable talent, and has we've had conversations in which he's talked about those portions of the day where the light is simply magical, and I really experienced that sitting in the back of the house in rural Germany, and watching that that golden light filter through those green leaves, or the little side trips down the two-lane, extremely well-built roads in the country, past fields where long sheets of opaque white, I guess it was plastic, covered the fields because they were asparagus fields, and you can't let the sunlight strike the growing asparagus lest it turn its natural green. And the whole point of asparagus season in Germany is white asparagus, and it was yummy. We had toward the end of my stay there, we did have one evening that was hillbilly night. It was not possible to find pinto beans or October beans or anything. I was going to do beans and cornbread, but no, those kind of beans weren't available in the grocery store. But we did find some cornmeal, so we made cornbread one evening, and it went over very, very well. I think we'll be working on the cornbread recipe again soon. No, I will realize at some point in time what I missed out on, or what I missed out on talking about. One of the things simply that I had some tweets along the way from Sandra, who said at that point in time, you don't realize how messed up things are here until you get outside of the U.S. and look back. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And it's true. It's true. I mean, I was doing, after last night's just brain drain, I got down to the business today of trying to come up, doing my usual pre-show research and reading and everything, and it seemed like story after story after story was just the insane crap that occupies our minds and our days and our world here in the U.S. that doesn't amount to a hill of beans outside the U.S. elsewhere. And I don't even begin to have the globe-trotting street cred to talk about how it is in other places. But, you know, lucky for us, we've got expatriate Americans and folks from other countries who listen to this program who can verify what I'm talking about. And at the risk of not naming someone who is very near and dear to this program, I mean, just ticking off a few names. I already mentioned Scott in Sweden. There's Michael in Norway. There's our buddy Robert, a friend of long standing from Japan. Of course, the entirety of the Australian listenership. Who have from time to time, our buddy Horst in the Far East, in Asia. We've got folks all over the planet who know what it is to be there looking back here, and what a zoo this place looks like at a distance. I mean, Jesus Christ! We couldn't even get a bill through the Senate today that would say that women who work at the same jobs as men deserve to be paid equally as men. What would the Republicans call this? The vagina deduction? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't have a penis. We're not going to pay you as much. What does that say about the work product of American men? There's an old joke out there about it. Oh, Jesus. There's an old joke out there about a guy who has a terrible, terrible car accident, and, you know, it gets cut off. But because of the miracles of modern surgery, his penis he's given a new penis by having a baby elephant's trunk transplanted into his groin. And after the required the period of healing, he's going about his life with this baby elephant's trunk penis of his. I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe I'm sitting here telling a joke about a guy with a baby elephant's trunk for a penis. But no, but he goes to one of his, it's his first evening out in a social situation, and he's sitting at dinner, and all of a sudden, of its own free will and unbidden, this baby elephant penis trunk pokes up from under the dinner table, reaches out over the table, grabs a dinner roll, and disappears back under the table. And in an attempt to be civil, the lady sitting next to the man says, "That was rather amazing. Can you do that anytime you want to?" And he said, "Apparently so, but I don't think I can stand getting another roll shoved up my ass." So what is it about a penis that conveys greater wage-earning potential on something less than half of the population of the United States? What is it? I don't want to be graphic. But what is it? We really, really, really could not pass a pay equity bill in the Senate of the United States today. And I guess for some, it will be... what? Is there a biblical quotation that these right-wing repiglickens are relying on? I don't know. But the repiglickens filibustered the Paycheck Fairness Act, and the bill failed by a vote of, and for those of you who understand the nature of mathematics far better than I do, it failed, the measure failed by a 52-47 vote. In other words, 52 members of the United States Senate voted in favor of the Paycheck Fairness Act, 47 voted against it. But in the twisted world of minority control of a legislative body, a majority isn't really a majority anymore. Because poor Harry Reid, who had a chance to change the filibuster rules at the beginning of the last Congress in 2010, and has subsequently admitted that he was wrong in not doing so, poor Harry Reid couldn't muster up the 60-vote supermajority required to pass any legislation through the Senate of the United States. And that supermajority requirement appears neither in the Constitution nor in the rules of the Senate itself. It is imposed upon the United States by an obstreperous, obstructionist minority that is intent on keeping anything good from happening in the United States of America. Women make 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. A penis is apparently the equivalent of an extra 23 cents. Does having a fly in one's trouser occasion an additional 23 cents per hour cost for clothing, for Christ's sakes? Jesus, let's all go to kilts, and maybe then women can get equal pay in this country. And at that 77-cent level, you got to remember that more and more often in this country, women are becoming the primary breadwinners, bringing home the bacon, earners in families in the United States. In some families, and this was occasioned, I believe, sociologically as a function of Republican unstated diktat, because if you go back and you look at the numbers, if I recall correctly, the last time that the United States was made up of a majority of single wage earner families was the Carter administration, and that predated the Reagan administration, and the Reagan administration is where the real war on families began, because that's when both spouses began having to go to work at each at their own job or each at their own jobs. Remember the woman who stood up in Minnesota during the reign of George the Dumber and told him about having to work three jobs simply to stay afloat with her in her family? And George responded by saying, "Well, that's uniquely American, isn't it?" Yeah, I guess. But you've got, there are dual wage earner families out there. Mom goes to work and dad goes to work. And on average, he earns 23 cents more per hour than she does just by virtue of his chromosomal makeup. Makeup, well, that's probably what it is. It's those women spending all that time putting on makeup, and that lowers their productivity because they're not at their jobs as much. I mean, they take longer in the bathroom, for Christ's sakes. There's that 23 cents an hour. Well, maybe we've got an answer. Dr. John out there. He says, what is it about the penis that equals better pay? Bob, the fact that 90% of the Congress has one. It's that simple. It may very well be. Jim noting, he said, a zoo does not begin to describe it. Elephant's penis. That 60 vote in the Senate business was a Republican coup d'etat. What a disaster. And indeed, it is. Barbara Mikulski, a senator worthy of some considerable respect from Maryland, took to the floor right after the failure, you know, the 52 vote to 47 vote failure of the Equal Pay Act, Paycheck Fairness Act to pass, Barbara Mikulski took to the floor of the Senate and had this to say.
And I just want to say this in the words of Abigail Adams. While John Adams and all the guys were sitting around Philadelphia writing the Constitution, she wrote them a letter and said, don't forget the ladies. And they did it for 150 years. And then they forget, too, to get rid of the loopholes in the Equal Pay Act now. Well, Abigail said, if you forget us, we'll foment our own revolution. And we're going to ferment our revolution. So I say to the women here, to the good men who support us, to the women out there in America, let's keep this fight going. Put on your lipstick. Square your shoulders. Suit up. And let's fight for this new American revolution where women are paid for equal pay, for equal work, and let's end wage discrimination in this century once and for all.
In this century. That's kind of operative in her statement, I think. It's 2012? Did I come unstuck in time like Billy Pilgrim somewhere between Amsterdam and here? No, it is. It's 2012. We should be, but we've had this conversation before. A vote like this is, Jesus, it's a mid-19th century vote. I mean, if you're if you've got a functional understanding of the debate over gender equity and gender fairness, this kind of a vote predates John Stuart Mill's On the Subjection of Women. The outcome of this particular vote predates the Married Women's Property Act. I don't have enough data to know the answer, but anybody, Scott, anybody, I wish some of my German friends were listening. Does this seem as crazy? If you're outside the U.S., does this seem as crazy out there as it feels to me here? I mean, yes, there are an abundance of other stories in the stack this evening, but this one just... Maybe because it hit a little bit later in the day. Been sitting around watching whatever stories I could see coming out of Wisconsin and hoping against hope that there will be a good outcome there in Wisconsin. Oh, and this coming in from Mora, 23 cents. Mora says, women do not take longer in the bathroom at work. No self-respecting woman tucks a newspaper under her arm and proudly parades to the bathroom. We do not use the bathroom as a reading room. Touche, Mora. Touche. So true. But what... What other excuses have the right wing? I'm sure it's the same thing that they offer any time we talk about the minimum wage. Well, you know, if we have pay equity in the United States, the whole blurn doomdle dang dongdle economy will just collapse overnight. We'll be standing around in the smoking ruins of our capitalist free market miracle marketplace economy, and people will turn to Sharia law, and then where will we be? You know, if Hillary Clinton had been elected in 2008, would we have reduced her presidential salary by 23% by virtue of gender? God, this is stupid. And don't forget mean-spirited and hateful. Dr. John noting, think of Western Europe and nations where women have led, Ireland, England, and yes, Germany, among others. Yes, they likely think it's astounding. And how can it not? In some ways, I fear that there's a sort of acceptance that they're not acceptance, but what's the word that I'm looking for here? I fear that there's some sort of thing. That's a handy little piece of English, Bob. Thing that sets in even in the progressive liberal mind, where we say, well, you know, of course the Paycheck Fairness Act failed. You know, it's Republicans. Where everything that we hope for in the way of decency or fairness or freedom. And every time we see something along those lines simply go down in flames, we come up with the Chinatown response. Forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Forget about it, America. It's republicanism. And so we say that nothing will be accomplished. This is... Would the Republicans stop if... I, I don't know what analogy to use. If America was on fire, would Republicans stop a bill in the Senate to try to put the fire out? If America was literally sinking beneath the oceans, would Republicans stop a bill in the Senate that tried to bail the water out of the boat? Well, from the looks of things such as this, it seems the inescapable answer is, why, yes, as a matter of fact, they would. They would stand there and salute the flag as the flag went underwater. They would stand there and look at a burning America and say, burn, baby, burn! Because that's what they're doing. They're doing it already. I don't know if people fully understand that we are talking about a political party that is as inimical to the very idea of the United States of America as any organization anywhere in the world has ever been. There is no more un-American organization, no more un-American group in the world today, Al-Qaeda included, than the Republican Party of the United States of America. Yeah, Clayton, maybe that's what I was getting at. Do we progressives, liberals, Democrats, decent people, do we simply acquiesce in the ruination of this country by the Republican Party when we say, of course they killed the Paycheck Fairness Act. It's what Republicans do. Is that what it is? Is there a way for the women of the United States, as Senator Mikulski suggested, to suit up and fight for a new American revolution that includes paycheck equity? This is, by the way, Willard Romney has been silent on the issue, whereas President Obama came out plainly in favor of the Paycheck Fairness Act. And no, what did the Republican say about this bill?
Oh, it's a useless piece of government meddlesome bureaucracy. And all it's going to do is help them tassel loafer wearing trial lawyers.
It was also referred to, this idea of not penalizing every woman in the country 23 cents on the dollar for simply having a vagina. It was also referred to by one creep from Nevada, Senator Dean Heller.
A war on free enterprise.
Really? A war on free enterprise? Wouldn't it... I'd kind of like to hear that fleshed out a little bit. How paying two people the same money for the same job over the same period of time. I'd like to hear that fleshed out, how that's a war on free enterprise. Because all of this proceeds from a position of relative equity. You've got two people identically qualified for the same job, but because one is of a different gender than the other, you can pay one 23 cents less on the dollar?
and that somehow violates principles of free enterprise? Astonishing. Just mind-boggling. Here's our first installment of food porn this evening. Dr. John noting, he says, wow, my dinner tonight's pinto beans stewed with green chilies. That would have changed those Germans forever. Oh, yeah. Sounds pretty damn good to me here. You got the cornbread to go with it, John, do you? Tasty. Mighty tasty. How did the Senate's women, GOP women vote on it, asks Marty. I don't have the direct vote tally here in front of me. But you can figure it for yourself. It's 52-47, with Mark Kirk of Illinois being absent as a result of illness. Is it possible Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, Maine? Would that account for that the 2 in 52? See, this is one of those moments where despite much of the frequent complaining that is in many instances valid, in this case it's not. You know, this argument and an old friend of mine going all the way back to high school who's a right-wing Republican, despite his complaints to the contrary. And says there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. Well, by God, right there is your proof that there is a difference. You know, there's that free market miracle magic underwear wearing Mitt Romney, Willard, who is too terrified to even take a position on this bill. Yeah, versus President Obama, who said he'd really like to see it passed and would sign it into law. There really is a difference. Now, granted, we can have a discussion, and it would be, and there would be many valid points in the discussion about such things as drone attacks on American citizens and kill lists and things like that. But I submit to you that kind of thing is not a function of party, but rather a function of what I have described in past instances as empire behavior. But that's the kind of thing that you get not as a result of politics, but as a result of empire. Those indiscriminate kill lists and so forth are the things that empires do. I am in no wise advocating for them or excusing them. It is reprehensible. But it is something that we who live in reality world must acknowledge as a function of empire. Any president at this stage in the development of the United States of America would likely do something similar. Because anyone, in order to get close to running for the presidency, i.e. get either party's nomination, is going to have to be pro-empire, even if the empire is crumbling before our very eyes. Now, the failure of this pay equity bill was stunning to me. Because I don't like the thought of living in an America where we simply look at anything that is forward-moving, that creates progress toward human rights, and pay equity is a matter of human rights. And we say, well, we just can't have that because the Republicans won't let us. I can't simply accept that as my default position, and I suspect that many of you find it equally difficult to do so. Because it feels like, it looks like, it smells like surrender. And if there is one thing to be said of the members of the Horn family, while there may be a number of surrendercrats out there, the Horn family are not them. The folks that I got to talk to in Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago are not them. You take that that group of people that I got to speak to at Fightin' Bob North, and multiply them a few times over. Wisconsin, the Scott Walker wouldn't have a prayer. Wisconsin would be a dramatically better place. And if you replicate that state after state after state, this nation becomes a dramatically better place. Now, having just noted the fact that, one of the things that's been much on my mind since returning home is something that happened this past week in Washington, D.C. You know, over the past, starting at the end of February and into March and April, I spent a considerable amount of time in Washington, D.C., doing work alongside with some real Appalachian heroes, folks like Bo Webb, who is in D.C. right now working, and has put in, and has put everything in his world aside to work on this. Been working on the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. And I can tell you now, because I couldn't before, because things were rather sensitive at the time, but we have something really exciting going on in Washington, D.C. I can tell you that for the first time ever, in a couple of weeks, most likely, you will at least hear about here, and it will probably be announced in a number of other places. Folks like my good friend Jeff Biggers will likely write about it. A truly historical moment will take place in a couple of weeks' time in Washington, D.C., when the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act is introduced in the House of Representatives. This has been the product of a tremendous amount of work. And I am not and will not laud myself in this. Instead, I will laud the others who poured heart and soul into it, one of whom was my son. My son, at the age of 16, recognizing that his world is under assault, was with me every time I went to Washington, D.C., to work on this bill. The Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act will place a moratorium on all mountaintop removal permits going forward, based upon the incredibly disturbing amount of peer-reviewed scientific data that indicates that living in Appalachia is itself a death sentence. Ferg was born here. Ferg was born not with something that you would ever see, but he was born with a birth defect that could very easily be a function of his having been gestated in a world awash in coal toxins. My eldest daughter right now has been passing through a period of profound illness that stems from the fact that her thyroid gland has gone absolutely mad. Life-threateningly so. She's uninsured. She is a mother of three toddlers. And one of those parts of the body that are frequently assaulted by the toxins that come from coal is the thyroid. I was worried sick about her the whole time I was gone. Agnes, though, as I noted in an email earlier today, is the real hero of this piece, because she was worrying about me and worrying about our eldest daughter at the same time, Laura, and left our home here to go to her home there and help take care of her in her illness. Coal is poisonous. And it imposes upon anyone who lives here a set of health parameters that say that because you were born here, because you live here, because you draw breath here in Appalachia, you are, by definition, subject to non-consensual sacrifice. Whether it be by heart disease, lung disease, cancer, brain disease, endocrine disorders, genitourinary disorders, birth defects. That just because you live in Appalachia and Appalachia has been laid back across the altar of unholy profit and sacrifice to the coal industry, that just because you're born here, you live here, you breathe here, you exist here, that you must pay with your very life itself for the profits of the coal industry. It has been this way for nigh unto 125 years. But now we're finding out that rather than getting better, it's getting worse. That the poisons of the coal industry are reaching out from the mine itself and into the communities of the innocent people who live here. Not people who go down into the depths of the earth to mine coal and take those risks upon themselves, but people who just happen to live here. Twice as likely to get cancer if you live in a mountaintop removal community. A pregnant mother living in a mountaintop removal community who does not smoke, 181% more likely to give birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than a smoking mother who doesn't live near mountaintop removal. The coal industry is willing to sacrifice anyone and everyone for their avarice. And the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act says no. We're going to find out. A moratorium is placed by this act. A moratorium is placed that has never been placed before on mountaintop removal permits. And the federal government funds a complete multi-year in-depth study to find out the exact reasons why people have to die sooner, die more brutally, die more often when they live near mountaintop removal. and this piece of historic legislation will be introduced in the House of Representatives probably in about 2 weeks. And that, my dear friends, my cherished colleagues, is why I was gone to Washington, D.C. so much toward the end of the winter and the beginning of the spring. Because we were working on that. It takes a real hero to stand up against the thugs of the coal industry and their bought and paid for hacks and flacks and shills. God knows no member of the House from West Virginia would ever introduce such a thing. It would be political suicide for them, not to mention the fact that it would violate their own personal vows of undying fealty to the coal industry. It would take a real hero to have the courage to introduce something like that in the House of Representatives. Where, in heaven's name, might we find such a hero? I think you probably already know the answer, because there are damned few real American heroes in the House of Representatives. Anybody want to guess? Just take a shot in the dark. This whole thing began in the office of Dennis Kucinich, one of the few, and certainly. See? Yeah, internet latency. You're going to find out in a second, Marty, that you were right. Dennis Kucinich? Yeah. Dennis Kucinich. And so now you get an opportunity to work on this. It does not have a bill number because it has not yet been introduced, but it has been made known to the House of Representatives that it will be introduced. And many of you live in places where you have members of Congress who you are fortunate enough to be able to say are reasonably progressive. Some of you don't. Many members of this audience live behind the cornbread curtain in places like Kentucky and Tennessee and Texas, and Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia and South Carolina and North Carolina. But that doesn't mean that you can't advocate for it. You know, at the beginning of the program, I put the request for funds out there, and Dr. John put his challenge on the table. Well, what I'm going to ask you to do now requires not a penny. It requires nothing but compassion and a little bit of time. And with that in mind, I can't imagine that there is anyone within the sound of my voice who cannot do this. Everyone in the Horn family is politically active and politically aware. I don't care if your member of the House is a Republican or a Democrat. It is time that we make noise over this. Because the time of sacrificing Appalachian children should damned well be over. And this is an opportunity to put an end to it. Right you are, Bill. Bill's from Cleveland. Bill knows he has, for at least a little while longer, a hero in the House of Representatives. This takes precisely as much time as it will take you to pick up your phone and look up on the interweb tubes, which you obviously have because that's the only way this program gets to you. See how it works? and call. And let me say that a call is better than an email at this point. Pick up your phone and call your member of the House of Representatives and tell them that you want, fill in the name of your congressperson, to become an original co-sponsor on the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. See, it's real simple. It's the AIC Act. Appalachian Community Health Emergency AIC Act. Tell them, because it's not all right to have children endlessly sacrificed in the name of coal company profits. Tell them, because Appalachia is America too. Appalachia was America before a whole lot of America was America. Tell them, please, that it is utterly unacceptable for them not to be an original co-sponsor of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. I recently, at the beginning of May, had the opportunity to speak in Massachusetts. And I told them that part of the reason that I wanted to come up there was that so often ideas of freedom were gestated there. And that this marks another abolitionist turning point in the move toward full freedom for all Americans, and that New England, Massachusetts in particular, should be once again a prime mover in this effort. You have people in Massachusetts like Jim McGovern and Edmund Markey and Nikki Tsongas and every member of the Massachusetts congressional delegation should be demanded that they sign on to this, if for no other reason than to maintain the reality that freedom was born there twice, at the beginning of this country and with the abolitionist movement that ended slavery. And this new birth of freedom for unborn children, even, in Appalachia, should have the full-throated support of the Massachusetts congressional delegation. Jim Clyburn in South Carolina should sign onto this thing yesterday. I sincerely hope that John Sarbanes in Maryland will sign on. Donna Edwards should sign on without a second thought from Maryland. Earl Blumenauer in Oregon, this should be easy for him. And those are just a few. God knows the Democratic delegation from Wisconsin and Minnesota should sign on to this, because that sand mining that I mentioned at the beginning of the program last night is coming their way, and it uses the same kinds of high explosives that get into the air and the water that is used here in Appalachia and causes those birth defects, those diseases, unleashes those toxins. I'm sorry I've had to be obtuse or anything for as long as I have, but I hope you understand the necessity of it. Now that we can talk about it, I want to talk about it until I haven't any voice left for talking about it. Because just as with the story that began this program, so too is it incomprehensible that we would doom to early death, to agony, to misery, to disease, an entire segment of this population simply for the accident of the geography of their birth. That someone was unfortunate enough to be born into Appalachia's sacrifice zone. If we can be successful with this bill, then perhaps it can be used as a model for other oppressed communities to go forward and demand that the poisoning cease. Whether it be whether it be the ages-old culture of the Gulf Coast, or the tormented mining culture of the Southwest, or, as I noted, the impending toxicity that will blow over the beautiful, beautiful lands of the upper Midwest. The canaries in the coal mine have decided to squawk before we die. The Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act, and you can be a vital part in making it happen. Will you please? You email and you phone and you chat with a lot of other people that don't perhaps even hear this program. Can you spread the word? You know, people of goodwill acting in concert with determination are a force multiplier of almost incalculable value and incalculable power. Can you do that? Can you be that powerful? Can you refuse to, as Clayton noted earlier, can you refuse to acquiesce in the slaughter and sacrifice of this tormented region? Can you, please? If you have any questions, you know the email here, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. I will answer them. And if you have a particular, next week, the House is in session this week, but starting on Friday, they fly home. They will be in their home districts. There is a profound likelihood that next week your congressman will be in your district. So if you call his local office, not the office in D.C., call them too. But make sure you call the local office, his home base in your district, and demand that your member of Congress sign on to the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act, the AHE Act. And let's see this thing drop in the House with 100 co-sponsors who have enough courage to stand with quite possibly the single most courageous member of that body. Can you do it? Can you do it? Dr. John just wrote in. He said, tomorrow I'm calling my congressman, Maurice Hinchy, the local office and the Washington office, and telling him to become an original co-sponsor of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act, soon to be introduced by Congressman Kucinich. John says, and I'm adding $10 to my challenge as a thank you for this. Thank you. Thank you, John. We'll be talking more about this, and there's another story I want to get to in fairly short order. But you know what? I filibobstered for 3 solid hours last night, and I want to have some conversation radio, and I see some blinking lights here. There are other lights of lines that are open, and in light of the fact that we may damned well lose the toll-free number tomorrow night, if you've got something to say, I highly encourage you to say it, especially if you require the toll-free number to be able to say it. 877-443-2366 is the number before we lose it. Direct dial is 304-658-3333. I gave you the email address a couple of minutes ago. That's useful, too. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. You're always welcome in the chat room. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's free, and it's easy to register. Our moderator there, one of our two moderators there, is our good friend Lottie. And today is Lottie's birthday. So, happy birthday, Lottie. And thank you so much for so much effort and so much help. I asked my friend Bertha in Germany for some recommendations of some music she loves so I could share it with you guys. In talking about the fact that it ought not be okay to poison children for simply for having the misfortune of being born near the avaricious profiteering of the coal industry, I thought of this one tune by a popular artist in Germany named Wolfgang Müller. The name of the tune is Du sollst nicht. It is a poem by Maria Louise Kaschnitz that he put to music. It seems appropriate because Du sollst nicht, as I understand it, translates as thou shalt not. How about thou shalt not poison little hillbilly babies in the womb? So we'll take a little break and we'll come back to your calls. This is Conversation Radio. This is the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. I am Bob Kincaid, and we'll be back. Oh, there we go. Come on now.
Wenn meine Fratzen den Spiegel zerschneiden, wenn ich mich umdrehe nachts, fensterwärts, wandwärts, und die Leintücher seufzen, du sollst nicht sehen, wie ich mich vorwärts taste, blind an der Kette meiner Niederlagen, auch an diese kann man sich halten, noch anwesend sein, wenn ich meine pathetischen Verse lese, noch anwesend sein, wenn ich meine pathetischen Verse lese. Einmal bedurfte es nur eines Wortes von dir, und die Laufschritte in meinem Rücken fielen ab. Nur deine Hand hier unter die Wange geschoben, und ich schlief, und ich schlief, und ich schlief, und ich schlief. Nicht zu sehen.
schneiden, wenn ich mich umdrehe nachts. Fenster wärts, wandwärts und die Leintücher seufzen, du sollst nicht sehen, wie ich mich vorwärts taste, blind an der Kette meiner Niederlagen, auch an diese kann man sich halten, noch anwesend sein, wenn ich meine pathetischen Verse lese, noch anwesend sein, wenn ich meine pathetischen Verse lese. Einmal bedurfte es nur eines Wortes von dir, und die Laufschritte in meinem Rücken fielen ab. Nur deine Hand mir runter, die Wange geschoben, und ich schlief, 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 und ich schlief. Und ich schlief, 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 und ich schlief.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, hour number two. And our return after last night's three-hour filibuster, our return to actual, honest-to-goodness, genuine, no-kidding conversation radio. 13 minutes, almost 14 minutes past the hour here as the evening light pours in from the southern exposure of the studio here at the Head-On Radio Network Kincaid Family Mansion. A quick return to the emails before we go to the phones. This in from our good friend Andy in California. Representative Dennis Kucinich is a giant of a man among cowardly mice. Andy says, sorry about your bags in Belgium. Son of a bitch makes my blood boil. And, you know, I can hear Andy saying that. He says, we'll get your bill. My great-great-grandfather's name is on the ceiling of the rotunda at the public library in Boston, Massachusetts. His volunteers served at Gettysburg, buried at Arlington. We'll get your bill. We'll get the ache act. Some of us still have the DNA to fight. Thank you, Andy. Dr. John noting, I did you one better, Bob. Congressman Hinchey is retiring this year and has endorsed a staffer who's running for his seat in New York's 22nd District. I just emailed this man's campaign urging him to pledge his support for the AIC Act and to talk about it on the campaign trail. Thank you, John. Thank you very much. That's exciting. That's very exciting. You know, Joe Kennedy is running for the seat being vacated by, name's gone, retiring Massachusetts congressman. Come on, Bob. Oh, Barney Frank. And if any of you are in that district, you might contact Mr. Kennedy's campaign and tell him that we want his pledge to be a part of the AIC team when he arrives in the Congress of the United States. And thank you for all that you are doing, and thank you for all that you will do. This is a little, you know, this is a way to make a difference in this world. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Edward from Dallas.
Well, hey, Edward, how are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good now, I guess.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Haven't heard from you in a while.
I know. Well, first off, our computer blew up, and that's the way I got you on the Internet.
Yeah, there's no other way.
I know, and then my partner had a heart attack, and he was in the Baylor Medical Center.
Oh, mercy, I'm so sorry.
Well, he was in their cardiac unit for 4 days, and they put 2 stents in him, and then he was in rehab for 6 weeks, and he's doing just absolutely fine. And then I had a cataract operation, so finally I think I'm back in circulation.
Golly, Moses, I'm glad it all worked out. It's good to hear from you.
Well, I'm glad to hear you again. I'm glad to get the computer fixed so I can listen to you and get my Bob fixed every day.
Well, I'm happy to provide it. You know, if there's anything good about your computer going down, it doesn't sound like any of the rest of it was particularly happy, but if your computer's going to go south, you picked the great time for it simply because, you know, I was gone for a couple of weeks there.
Well, true. Oh, and by the way, my brother was robbed in Budapest, so don't feel too bad about it. You have to watch those people.
You'd be surprised. I've gotten a couple of emails saying that, you know, it's what happens over there.
Yeah, and I'm going to be voting because blocks south of me there's this woman, and she's the sister of Jim Maddox, who was our senator and our attorney general, and he was born and raised there, and she lives in the family home, and she's going to be banging on my door, making sure that I go vote. And you don't say no to Janice, let me tell you.
All right, sounds good.
Well, I'll let you go. I just want to say hi, and I'm so glad to hear everybody again. There's, you know, Susan and Juanita and Sandra and everybody.
Well, who knows who you may conjure up just by mentioning them?
Well, one never knows.
One doesn't. Edward, it's awfully good to hear from you, and I hope we'll hear from you again soon. You take care, and hope everybody there in the house, I hope you continue to heal and your partner as well. We wish him the absolute best.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you get better, too.
All right. Thank you much. Bye
now. Bye-bye.
And an email just came in from John. He says, so good to hear from Edward. I love his calls. And wish him and his partner health and happiness and lots more calls. See, it really is. It's like family around here. Isn't it nice? On the front range, Kate just wrote in. She said, my response to the paycheck equity vote, you might want to refresh the memories of the males of the species regarding the story of Lysistrata. The sisters are so busy earning 77 cents, they've forgotten all the power they have. Coal battles. It will do no good for me to contact Congressman Rayburg's office here in Helena. He's bought and paid for, as is this state. The rabid support for the oil sands and coal mining here in Montana is not unlike that of West Virginia folks. And she continues, P.S., since my contribution last night came in after midnight, can it go toward John's challenge? Absolutely. And she adds, please tell us how much is needed tonight to keep the 800 number hot. Now we're looking at about $500. Because, well, the vast majority of people who call this program do use the toll-free number. Really. In regard, Lysistrata, go and read the play. It's available online. It is a comic farce written in ancient Greece in which the women rise up and refuse to participate in war anymore and begin to by withholding sex from the men. And there really is power. And it would not be a bad idea if it was exercised. And you know what? I understand your point, Kate, about Congressman Rayburg, but it does not hurt to be, it does not hurt to exercise that Lysistratan power and let them know that not everybody is in the coal fold and drinking the toxic Kool-Aid. Just saying. An email, a phone call, it won't hurt anything, and it'll let them know that we're out there and we're fighting. And thanks for the reminder. So, now, to the phones, by Jove. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack.
Well, how are you, sir?
I'm back. I'm slowly getting back into the swing of things from my epic journey, and I guess I'll be okay. But how about you? The last time we talked, you were rather poorly. Are you getting some better?
Hanging in there. Trying to, anyway. So, Country Mouse.
Yeah, that's me.
How was it, Country Mouse, seeing the elephant, so to speak?
It was magnificent. And little Pollyanna me. I'm even trying to find some good out of the Belgian backpack heist.
I'm sorry about that. I mean, it does happen.
Ow! Mute that thing, Cossack.
Sorry about that. I'm in the chat room as well, obviously. It's unfortunate that happens. Like you said, the data!
Yeah. And when you've got 7% of a battery left to try to save your, there's no overestimating or over acknowledging the tremendous sweat condition alpha work that Agnes did as well.
Oh yeah.
And I double checked again today and nope, nothing. But I did get a note. I got a note from our buddy Tosh, and I'm going to go ahead and, even though the French-speaking cop was not into taking reports of muggings, I'm going to try to make sure that one of those gets filed.
Talk about useless police.
Well, in this case, they were.
Yeah, they're...
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Officer Friendly?
Officer Friendly does not chase, apparently doesn't chase fleet-footed, skipping, skinny jeans-wearing Belgians.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole concept, I don't know if they tried this crap out on you when you were a wee little one, but
Oh, you mean where they bring him into the first grade classroom and he tells you that the police are here to help?
Yeah. That stuff. That kind of went away around 67.
Well, that went out with, that went, Cossack, that went out with high button Greaves, buddy.
Oh, God. The only officer I ever ran into weren't real goddamn friendly, I can tell you that.
Oh, I've met some good ones. I've known some real good ones.
Oh yeah.
It's just that they're so damned outnumbered.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of basically bullies with badges and guns out there.
Yep. Well, that's what happens when you remember the story that's out there. If you if you've got an IQ over 110, you can't be a cop.
Yeah. Well, it would hamper you in your day-to-day workings, so to speak. You know, I was thinking about something. I am so past tired of niche politics, if you will. Yeah. Gay politics or women's politics or... Can we go to the concept that...
Of politics for the common good?
Well, that...
I mean, insofar as pay equity affects half of the population of this country, I'd say that goes toward the common good. And acknowledging the rights of a significant minority in this country expands rights, and that goes toward the common good. Absolutely. What drives me crazy, like I noted, Kostak, is that I get back here and you know, I had really, really high functioning English speaking hosts, and we talked about the issues of the day affecting Europe and Germany and France, and we talked about Greece, and we talked about the euro, and at no point in time was the word abortion ever mentioned. Because that's something there are a few other countries, and they are countries that are still influenced by the religion industry. But you know, sexual politics, gender politics, and I don't even like those phrases. It's more like bigotry politics. There are much more pressing issues. And I don't say that to discount the value of these, but rather the fact that these should not even be issues. This should have been a no-brainer a generation ago, Kostak. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as you saw when you were in Europe, the concepts with which we are grappling today are things that to Europeans just, it looks like we're not all there. And I think they may be right.
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy land.
Yeah.
And the only manifestation of that crazy that I saw over there, Kostak, was you know, seeing the rise of the goddamn Nazis.
Well,
you know, the stupid sticker, Minaret Verboten. They want to pass a bill forbidding how do you pronounce it? Muezzin, you know, the guy who does the call to prayer from the top of the minaret? That's not even allowed. It's just it is literally just an architectural piece. Now, Quasimodo can ring those godforsaken bells till hell freezes over, but no, they don't allow the call to prayer.
The bells.
Yeah, like I said, I think Edgar Allan Poe was just awakened from a decent night's sleep.
Yeah.
Probably after he'd been up for about 48 hours. You know, I'm lucky by hour 46, 47 that I wasn't just speaking Jabberwocky.
Yeah. Well, you get that way. And as you found out when you're inner clock is messed up. Everything is kind of messed up.
Yeah, but I settled down, and it was kind of beautiful. Like I said, I think I lost 10 or 15 pounds. I was eating better, walking a lot. God, if I'd stayed any longer, I would have wound up on a bicycle somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I get going real well, I can walk as fast as most bicycles can cruise. You know, just in terms of, you know, pedaling along through the city. And man, I loved it. It was just beautiful. It was.
And it made you want to almost not come home.
Yeah, had it not been for that profound that profound urge to see my beloved again and see my children, it would have been real. It would have been real easy to just curl up with some language learning program and work on my German for a while. But I'm gonna work on it. I really am. I was looking all over for good online free learning German classes, and I'm gonna polish my French a little bit. And I've loved languages since I was very young. And maybe I don't know. Maybe I missed my calling. But it would be fun even at this great age to become multilingual.
Well, you sort of kind of semi are.
Yeah, what? Because I speak American English and hillbilly.
Well, no, you've been exposed to French and German.
Oh yeah, enough to tell that the nattering little idiot to shut up. Fermez la bouche, cochon. Je parle ici maintenant. But that was just a gift of. You know, I was just slain in the spirit, and I wasn't up for it, and I was tired, and it just came out.
I would have paid to have seen that. But just the mental picture that I have.
It was fun. Yeah, his little finger poking in my charnier. You need to go and talk to the American bench, you American coward. Of course, I did that last night, and Jeanette wrote in from Minnesota and said, "Forgive me, but when you did that voice, the first thing I thought of was this." And it probably is where it came from. But she attached a photo of the French knight at the top of the tower in Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And she said, when you mimicked the guy's voice who yelled at you to go home because you were picking on French facts, I thought of this guy. And, of course, it's John. Yeah, it's John Cleese at the top of the battlements, you know, with his fingers in his ears. And she said, perhaps next time you could bring a killer bunny with you for idiots like those. She spelled idiots phonetically, which was delightful. What an adventure. Cossack, it's awful good to hear from you, brother. We will talk soon, okay?
Yep, it's good to have you back, Bob. I was having a hard time going cold turkey.
Yeah, well, so was I. I mean, I took that bag full of stuff with me because I figured there was a six-hour time difference and I would have time during the day to pull stuff together and at least get a podcast out there that I could start rolling at midnight, which would be ordinary showtime here. Little Belgian bastard.
Best laid plans of mice and men, as they say.
Yeah, I know. Often cost $2,500. Take it easy, Cossack. Good to hear from you, brother.
All right, take care, Bob. Have a good time. Say hi to everybody for me.
Sure will, no matter who your congressman is, don't forget to call in and tell him you want to see him sign on to the AIC Act, even if there's not a rat's chance in hell of him doing it.
I'll give it a try.
Can't hurt. All right, take it easy. Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, Yeah, you're having some sort of a re-entry shock, even though he was only away for a little bit, I bet.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
culture shock.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I don't know if it was the heat from the atmospheric friction or whatever, but it's well, you know, Agnes said the same thing after we came back from the Libboat cruise winter before this past. She said, are you sure we didn't pass through the Bermuda Triangle and just come back to America the Weird?
Well, no, but I mean, you live in what that Chris Hedges describes as sacrifice zone, so, I mean, it's even extra exaggerated, you know?
Oh, yeah, it is.
And, you know, I can't even, you know, I mean, because I was sort of wigged out when I came back to California, and that was, but I had been gone for, oh, God, almost 4 years, so it was
Oh man, that had to be like serious culture shock.
Well, yeah, it was really bizarre. You know, one of the funniest things was I had just been gotten well, as you would, I got well used to that access to health care anytime I wanted those 4 years I was gone. You know what I mean? And then when I came back to this country, it was like, oh, right, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm back.
And so, yeah, but, you know, and I always sort of credit leaving as, you know, being the biggest eye-opener of my life. Because if you live in America, I mean, it's very overwhelming here. You have no sense of what the rest of the world is and by design, you know, because it's a superpower. And even if you're just completely impoverished, you're still being subjected to all the trappings of that. And so when you get the hell out of here, you know, you get to see. I mean, you know, the world is well interesting, and I have to almost say that parts of it are far more desirable than, like I call this place, shithole. I'm sorry about that.
You know, and no need to apologize, because it is in places it is what it is, and you know, this is not to say that that there aren't places in America where you can walk out the front door and go down a block and walk into a bakery and get something delightful for breakfast. But that was my reality. And coming from here, where a loaf of effing Wonder Bread is 6 miles away, for me to just walk out the door and go down and get a really fresh, hot, just out of the oven, makes your mouth burn, you know, a croissant or a couple of hard rolls it was paradigm shifting, Sandra.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's completely, you know, and that's the thing that I was sort of, you know, a bit disturbed by what's going on in Europe, because it, you know, it's definitely being forsaken, but you know, there's bad things going on in Europe with this economic crisis, and it's just a shame, you know.
Yeah, it is, because the same people that want everything here want everything there. That's what I was talking about last night when I said that the 1% have no national allegiances.
No, but you know, I don't know. I really enjoyed the time I spent in Europe, especially, I mean, I laughed at Germany when I was there, because I thought, this place, you know, it's just, it's super duper efficient, which is a bit right off when you consider what their claim to fame is, but you don't even have oil spills in that motherfucker. I was flabbergasted when I was in Germany.
No, but they've, by God, got some mean-ass strip mines, that's for sure.
Oh, no, and they have that fat, they have those skinheads, you know. I mean, I was chased personally in Alexanderplatz when I was there by some. No, that shit ain't no joke.
Yeah, and there they were, laying around with their black T-shirts with their little 88s on them, drunker than Adam's off ox up there above Detmold. You know, just getting drunk with Herman's statue. What a useless bunch of sacks of shit with their stupid little stickers and their, you know, good guests come and good guests leave with pictures of people, women with kerchiefs on their head. You know, no, I understand why my new friends were, they were understandably upset that, you know, federal money, because they got 5% in the electoral process, federal money now funds the NPD.
Well, yeah, I mean, any sort of system like that, if you get enough votes, you get access. I don't know, you have that whole Euro 2012 going on, and the constant stories right now are like the black soccer players who are like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be doing this because of Ukraine and Poland. They're completely frightening places if you are of color. So, I mean, that's like the latest thing. They don't know.
Oh, I did see some of the, I saw, you know, BBC came into the TV, and
yeah.
I saw some of the coverage on the the Euro Football Championship, and no, there's a lot of people real uneasy about going to play a little football in Ukraine.
Yeah, no, that just, and it looks, I mean, that's just, I saw this amazing.
Well, the woman, and even the woman, you know, the woman who opposed the current thug in office, was taken to the hospital not too long back, having been beaten. The woman who led what color revolution was it? In Ukraine, she was beaten. And then the whole hooliganism, you know, and they offer these reassurances, oh, no, we will crack down on these thugs.
I know, and then you see, as soon as the officials say that, the show I watched went into the stadium and saw, you know, row after row of people doing the Nazi salute. So it's just kind of like, wow.
Yeah, maybe not.
So I don't know. Just because you were in Central Europe and... I mean, I know it's Germany, but it still is.
Well, and it was a very different Germany than had I been ensconced in Berlin, for instance. I was in Frankfurt for a couple of days, and that's where I accessed the healthcare system. But the majority of my time was spent in a very small town about 20 miles west of Münster, and it was. I guess I am country mouse, Sandra, because I loved it. I loved it. It was, you know, at market day every Thursday.
Oh, yeah,
and
no, those villages are, I mean, that's what I mean. I couldn't believe, you know, just how well laid out the villages were. And, you know, and I spent time in Stuttgart, which is southern Germany, which, you know, it's a bit special down there. But I had a great time when I was there. You know, I was staying with a friend, obviously, and we went driving on the Autobahn in her.
Yeah, and that's isn't that special?
And that was great.
Oh,
you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but unless you've got something with howling horsepower, just stay the hell out of that left lane.
Well, no, it's I always used to think, shit, if they ever have a crash on this mug, it's on and cracking, you know, but.
But I guess it does happen from time to time.
Oh, it does.
But there is an explicit understanding. There seems to be an explicit understanding of how one behaves out there.
Well, no, but when I was there, the big story was some freak decided to go the opposite way. Okay.
Yeah, and that's not bad driving. That's just dude with a death wish.
Right. And so you know you do get the crazies there. But you didn't go to Berlin, right?
No, not this time.
No, because Berlin is, you know, that's where it's happening. It's crazy there. But anyway, so are you planning on going back again or what?
There's a possibility. Well, it looks like there's at least one invitation back and maybe two.
Oh, okay.
There will be something this fall and apparently shareholder meeting season is May.
Oh, right.
The asparagus comes in at the same time as the shareholders. And there are a couple of banks that we especially want to address. And I tell you what, I don't even know if it's possible, Sandra, but I would love to go in there and speak the language, even if I sounded like a hillbilly, it would be okay.
Mm.
And to understand everything that's being said, because when that outgoing head of Deutsche Bank, who I mean, he's like a rock star in Germany. He's a Swiss guy by the name of Joseph Ackermann. There were photographs of Angela Merkel cooking him his birthday dinner. You know, just embarrassing stuff. He wields so much power. When that man told me that he comes from Switzerland and they love mountains and Deutsche Bank would never consider financing the blasting of mountains in Appalachia, you know, just a straight up, no kidding, bald faced lie, because we had the data in front of us that they had given a revolving credit account to Alpha Natural Resources, the single largest practitioner of mountaintop removal in the world. You know, I suddenly understood why people throw shoes.
Well, I know, but were the meetings as well-armed or guarded?
Oh, no. It was a thousand times more civilized. It wasn't Bank of America with a bunch of armed guards up and down the wall and a plainclothes thug in every row. No, this was beautiful women. That's what you saw at every entrance, just beautiful women. And then, you know, back behind them were the guys with the things in their ears. But the thing is, people were shouting from the audience, and the first shout from the audience would have gotten you taken out, maybe tasered, and possibly beaten at Bank of America.
Right, because of because over here you have this sort of fake deference to the job creator meme that's, you know, coursing all through this culture now, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to show some sort
of deference. Well, and, you know, it's also inescapable that if you want a manifestation of fascism, corporate America is it.
Oh, yeah, no.
Even as compared to what was otherwise well-heeled corporate Europe. You know, they never would have, France or Germany, either one, would have countenanced a bunch of armed thugs in the room.
Well, I know, and corporate is a lot different in Europe than it is here anyway, you know. But, sounds like an interesting trip. I bet that fly into the various airports here, though, was hell. Because I always remember when I go to the airport in Atlanta, I'm like, ew, with this glass room where the smoke is bellowing out. That airport freaks me right out.
Oh, no, but I was so grateful for those glass rooms.
Yeah, but can't you still smoke like a chimney in Europe? No.
I mean, Euro-wide, no smoking in public accommodations.
That's interesting, because I know in France they did that on the metro, and it still was sort of honor system hell in France.
I never saw anybody light up on any of the public transit, but bless their hearts, in the Frankfurt airport and in Schiphol, I'm still having trouble, you know, in Amsterdam. In Frankfurt, they had this one little, it was almost like a wagon that had been parked in one of the concourses that was sponsored by Camel, that had inbuilt the ventilation system and filtration and everything, and you could step inside there and smoke. Mm-hmm. And then they had similar rooms in the Amsterdam airport, because you know what? I did. I sat there and chain smoked before I got on the plane.
Yeah, well, I know they pretty much. I know in England. I mean, a lot, when I went to England in 2010, you know, I was amazed by how it's smoke free there now. You know what I mean? They really have sort of stamped it out, and I didn't know if it was the same.
Oh yeah.
Continent, but yeah, I'm not really surprised because.
But you can still smoke at the sidewalk cafes and stuff, and that was
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, okay, because you can't even, that's not even happening. In California, it's getting to the point where if you're in an apartment, they're like, no, you can't smoke. So it's pretty hardcore here.
Yeah, it is. And I did pick up, speaking of habits, I picked up one nice little habit. They sell as a bottled beverage, and I've never seen it over here, but it's a mix of about half apple juice and half sparkling mineral water.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I got real fond of that real quick. And so I've decided to replicate that over here, because that's just refreshing and nice, and beats the hell out of a Pepsi or a Coca-Cola.
Oh, no. I mean, the drinks over there are always much more, yeah.
Well, see, and I did, I took a moment because I was reminded real quick that one of the nice things is that you're not going to run across any genetically modified anything.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they keep trying, though, because that market is so big, they can't help themselves. But, yeah.
But I picked up a can of Coca-Cola, and you know, nowhere in the ingredients label, I passed it over to my translator and said, where on here does it say high fructose corn syrup? And it doesn't, Bob. It doesn't.
It just says sugar?
It says sugar.
Right.
And in the case of most of Europe, it's beet sugar and not cane sugar, but it's sugar. And so no HFCS, no bovine recombinant growth hormone. The milk was delicious. The yogurt was fabulous.
Oh, yeah, the yogurt's great. Yeah, no. Yep. It is definitely sort of a different scene over there. Well,
but it was an honest to God moment, Sandra, when that one little marching band decided to fire up the Panzerlied. I mean, I guess it's not like it's a forbidden song or anything, but my God, it just, you know, screwed with my head a little bit. It's like, well, this is something I never expected to hear.
Well, the thing that did me in when I was in Germany was, it was sort of like, I was just blown away, you know, because I didn't know anything about it. The food is just fucking fantastic.
Oh, yes.
In Germany, and the coffee. The coffee was out of this world. And I must have went to, I don't know how many matinee operas when I was there. I was like, what is this?
Oh, I missed out on the opera. I would show up for that.
The opera is like, you know, just sort of a, you know what I mean? It's real casual. You just sort of sit around, and there it is, opera everywhere. So I quite.
And which is
that.
You know, and I caught a bunch of hell for my remarks on opera a few weeks ago. But it's a different thing. It is approachable. It's not something that only the 1% goes to over there.
Oh no. The ones that I went to were, you know, low, you know, just small concerns. But I was just sort of amused by how frequently they were, and they're sort of part of the village. And it is a village. They are villages, aren't they?
Yeah, they really and truly are. You know, you've got a stationery store, and that's where you go for writing instruments and paper and stuff.
No, it is. It's not like you're going to run up on some Walmart. I mean, in fact, Walmart was ran out of Germany. It just didn't work out.
Well, there's another box to check off in the pro category.
Yeah, I was just, you know, I remember that whole story is that they finally just pulled up and left because they couldn't deal with, A, the labor issues, and, B, Germans are more into their little small stores, you know, as a culture.
Yeah. Well, it's like that little bakery I went to every morning. You walk in there, and it's just perfume. I guess they start baking at like 3 o'clock in the morning or something, and they're shut down by, you know, 1 or 2. But my God, the fresh bread and the bread. Oh my God, the bread.
Yeah, well, no, I had that, and you know, my friend's mother would always make this sort of amazing handmade pasta, and it was just like, are you kidding me? So yeah, it was, the food was great, and that's why I mentioned the sort of hot camembert. I'm like, hello, raspberry.
Yeah, I know.
Just sort of full on, like, amazing food. But anyway, listen, now you're back here, I guess. My whole thing today is, Wisconsin thing. I don't really understand what happened, but apparently there's a lot of sort of backlash against the unions there. A lot of resentment.
Yeah, well, and of course it's all that's been deliberately ginned up. I mean, look at that one particular dirty trick. Malloy was talking about it last night, and it's all over the internet today. You know, that the Republicans are robocalling, telling people that. And they're targeting Democrats, of course. If you sign the petition, you don't need to go vote.
Yeah, but they're apparently having massive turnouts, though.
It's huge in Madison and Milwaukee both.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was interesting. And so we'll see. I don't really know. I thought it would be something that would happen, but I guess the spending ratio is like 7 to 1.
Oh, it was ten. It was in excess of 10 to 1 when I was out there.
Well, I knew it was, you know, just some. But that, I don't know.
He was getting in enough money that he could divert some nearly $200,000 from his campaign to his legal defense fund.
No, but the thing is that dude is like about to get indicted. I mean, this is such an ugly situation. So, it'd be really great if he's recalled, but. It's an uphill battle for the Barrett side. And didn't Clinton, nasty-ass Clinton, show up there?
It seems, I may have missed that in my absence.
Yeah, I think he did. After he was praising Bain Capital, I think he sleazed on into Madison for a few hours.
What, praising Brent, huh?
Oh, you heard about the Cory, did you hear about the Cory Booker business?
Oh, that part, yeah.
Yeah, but well, Clinton also chimed in about how we shouldn't criticize Bain, you know. And you think about what Clinton is—he's like the original DLC neoliberal. So he just came out, and you know, somebody tweeted some Republican, and I had to retweet it because I was laughing. She said, "Oh, Clinton's going to make Obama's life hell until he puts Hillary on the ticket." Rolling, because that didn't help Obama's cause, you know. But see, in the meanwhile, though, you know, Obama might drone his ass. He might want to shut the because I'm scared of Obama with his. The economy may be crashing, but I'm going to kill MFers day in and day out. It's been 3 days in a row.
Yep.
There are up to 30 people in Pakistan. I'm like, my God, I thought Tuesday was kill day. I guess it is. I mean, when it's Tuesday.
If it's Tuesday, this must be Pakistan?
Yeah, when it, if it's
God, Tuesday, and we're laughing, and I mean, we shouldn't.
Well,
but
I'm laughing because I'm overwhelmed by it, how sick it is. That this fool is sitting there, you know, quoting Qantas and all these other just war freaks to justify what he's doing. But it's like Obama. The problem with that theory is that the war's ended, MF. That's the difference.
Oh, but that's the beauty. That's the beauty of Orwellian society, Sandra. The war never ends.
Well, no, but you can't be coming out with this just war shit, and you know, then just.
Well, the whole foundation of just war is based on a pack of lies, because
no,
you know that begins with who? The Augustine of Hippo, or the Thomas Aquinas, or
yeah,
you know, one
yeah.
of those hair shirt wearing freaks.
No, but at least, but. One of the lies, at least, is that there is the idea of it ending. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's true enough.
And with, you know, Obama, it's like, well, there doesn't seem to be no end. All we get from him is, I'm a reasonable person, so please let me orchestrate this kill machine from the executive branch that's unchecked, you know? I had somebody ask me, do you know any other black people who give the kind of analysis you do about Obama. You know, I'm like, damn, is it that far gone?
Well, I mean, what about Black Agenda Report?
You don't know, but it's just kind of
Yeah,
but it's just, but the thing is, I don't even want to look at it like that. And it disturbs me that with unemployment in the black community 20%+, that, you know, it's okay no matter what this man does. Because to me, I'm so troubled by him deciding who dies to the point where if you're there, you must be up to no good. Haven't we heard that before, Bob?
If you're not with us, you're against us?
Well, no, it didn't. I'm sorry to go there, but isn't that what they say about young black men that are walking?
Oh, yeah.
You must be up to no good. And then he's saying that if you're in some village in Pakistan, you happen to get blown up. Well, you must not have been up to no good. I mean, that was in that article. I couldn't believe it.
And it extends beyond the drone business. There was another story out today, Sandra. You know, the have you been following the crisis of the Export-Import Bank?
I saw something vaguely, but what's the...
Well, you know, the Republicans were suddenly rebelling against it. So now, after like 5 years of not doing it,
yeah.
With the blessing of the Obama administration, they have just backed, the Export-Import Bank has just backed to the tune of $90 million taxpayer dollars, loans to boost the overseas sale of coal. Which means, of course, that more blasting goes off here in the aforementioned sacrifice zone.
Right.
And Sierra Club is Sierra Club's already endorsed Barack Obama, of course. But you know, there's $90 million in loan guarantees going out to a coal broker named X Coal, letter X, C O A L, out of Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and they buy coal from West Virginia and Pennsylvania and ship it overseas, a lot of it to India. So that's, you know, that's not going to bode well, but, you know, there's the Obama administration. This is good for America. Hey.
Well, listen, if he don't start threatening Germany with another invasion, he may not have to worry about it. Because if Europe, I think that Europe ties directly to Obama's election fortunes at this point.
Well, and right before I left, the French elections went anti-austerity, and then there was the provincial or state election in Germany that was a direct rejection of Merkel and the austerity there.
No, but she just came out today talking about, no, fools, it ain't nothing changing. And they'll keep running their morality tale until, I guess, the whole thing collapses. I really don't know. But either they have to integrate deeply or it's going to come apart. Because if you are in Spain and you're like, let's see, I have $250,000 and I can move this money to Germany or to some other bank that's more solvent but keeps the same currency, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that money's leaving.
Okay, so I'm just saying, it's kind of like...
how many billions of dollars have left Spain in the last couple of weeks? Euros?
The Spain thing really makes me so upset because, you know, their public debt was perfectly okay until they were, you know, Ponzi'd to death.
They got sold the Goldman Sachs bill of goods,
no,
didn't they?
It's terrible what's going on there. It's so effed up. And, you know, I don't know, the Stockholm Syndrome has gripped Ireland because them poor bastards, you know, re-upped the other day.
Yep.
And so, I don't know. I just, you know, I'm scared because out here in California.
And, I mean, it's like a foregone conclusion, isn't it, Sandra, that there's going to be a drachma back in Greece come January or so?
No, I mean, I think that it's a real problem if any of these countries leave because of all the third-party concerns, you know, back to our quadrillion derivative bubble that's floating. Don't forget that. Never forget that, Bob.
No.
I mean, because J.P. Morgan thought they'd forget about it, and you saw what happened to their dumbasses.
Yeah, goodbye now. Right.
But I don't know. I just said, over here in California, we got two cities, San Diego and San Jose, that's being allowed to vote on the pensions of public workers up in this mug, if you can imagine that.
Wait, they're subjecting...
They're voting to reduce it, yeah, the public.
Isn't that a contract between the individuals and the... Oh, Jesus.
That's what I'm saying, though, but that's what's going on. So, it's, you know, it's very disturbing, and it's sort of, you know, the resentment is... I don't know. I think the resentment is pretty strong. So,
well, Marty wrote in and wants to know your view, and I'm just kind of asking this question because I'm not up on it. Marty says, ask Sandra her views on 28 and 29 in California.
Well, 20. I see one of them is a cigarette one.
Right.
You know what? I may offend, but I'm gonna have to vote. I voted against that one because it's just so regressive.
Well, it is regressive taxation.
You know, I'm not. I'm just really regressive. They want to slap a dollar on each pack, and it's just kind of like, you know, what in the world? But anyway.
Well, and this in a state that cannot constitutionally cannot raise taxes on property holders. So
yeah,
we're going. They're going to shake it out of the ass of the smokers.
No, and then there's a term limit one. You know, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of term limits too. I have to say.
And
that just goes back to, you know, what I know about government, and you know, you need to have institutional memory and blah blah blah. So I always have problems with term limits.
Well, and I mean, isn't term limitation a de facto admission that the electoral system has failed? I mean, because term limits happen at the ballot box, don't they?
Supposedly. And once again, it's just another way to concede your level of participation in the democracy. You know, it's just another nail in the coffin on that one.
Right. It's a punt.
Yeah. But anyway.
Oh,
yeah.
Before you go, I have to ask, did you see the story about the because you mentioned England a little bit ago in the UK, I saw this in the chat room and I just sort of recoiled in horror because
I mean them poor people who had to work for free and sleep under the bridge.
Yeah, for the Jubilee.
Oh yeah, no, that shit. I retweeted that nonstop. That is the most incredible story, and it's just sort of it's just blatant serfdom. As that bitch is floating down the Thames on a golden barge. I mean, it's stunning. It was just like, huh? It was horrifying.
Yeah, a group of long-term unemployed job seekers were bussed into London to work as unpaid stewards during the Diamond Jubilee celebrations. And this is the kicker for me. And were told to sleep under London Bridge before working in the river pageant.
How Dickensian. And how disgusting the whole, parading that queen all over the show. It's just, ew. All of it. Apparently, though, you know, the BBC coverage, you know, it really sort of bombed, and, you know, they looked like the...
Well, you know, right before I left Frankfurt Friday morning, I had the Beeb on, and they were with all their glowing coverage of, as a special to note the Jubilee, Charles had released some private family home movies showing Mum not being a distant mommy to her dysfunctional family. One of the clips that they showed, Sandra, was especially disturbing because it was Charles and his sister as children who had been buried in sand up to their necks at the beach, and they just looked like little headless royals sitting on the sand.
Oh no! I mean, the whole thing is just so to me. It was just kind of horrifying, and it was that barge. Remember that picture we saw of it?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the Thames with that horrible husband of hers who ended up in a hospital, and it's just like, damn, when's glory happening? Shit, they must be 100.
But you know, how old did the Queen Mum live to be? 112 or something like Methuselah or something?
Oh God, anytime she opened her mouth towards the end there, it was really quite disturbing, wasn't it?
Good job.
She probably was having conversations with Cecil Rhodes himself, man. Yeah, no, it's the Royals. No, that's too much. But listen, I know this is really lame on the radio, but I must say the Twitter session on Sunday was classic, man.
No, I got it. You know, you gotta, if you are at all inclined to tweet, you gotta follow Isaac TCI and you gotta follow Sandra Nignog 63, because I mean that was like the second time you two have gotten into a Sunday session that just left me wrecked on the damn rocks.
No, Isaac is so bad, but yeah, no, because like I said, you know, I don't really want my feed to go ignorant, but it just goes off the deep end. But yeah, that was
no. Crazy. Well, see, you got Agnes running around the house talking about the difference between folded and rolled.
Oh shit! Yeah, well, that was the high point of my weekend. See, that's what's going on here. That had me going. Okay.
Okay, but here I caught that. You know what? This is proof that we are old people, because I hauled it up on the screen and I said, "Hey, Ferg, come here," and I rolled it for you. Oh no, Dad, I saw this, there's like one black kid here, and he's a friend of Ferg's. Naturally, uh-huh. Yeah, they're pals. And he's like, "Yeah, he told me that's what he wants to grow up and be Black Dynamite."
Oh no, but I mean, I don't know when the next installment. Anyway, all that was...
Oh, funny. But the
Arsenio Hall is in that. I mean, the whole thing is just beyond hilarious, okay? That
the frog Curtis?
All of it. All of it is beyond the beyond, you know, and...
Well, I love the conceptual beginning of it, where it explained that because there was no further money for education, we had left it up to puppets.
Yes.
And that...
The whole education... of it was great, and I was like, no, they did not have Massa's chicken house. What the?
With the bucket and everything.
Right, and then Home Chick had to give up the recipe.
11 herbs and spices. But you know, he still didn't get that 11th herb and spice.
Sure didn't. Oh no.
That and the video. Oh my God.
Oh, God, no.
Swipe your EBT. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, see, that one is, that is very...
That's a brilliant piece of satire.
No, but that's close to the edge right there. I was like, oh, no. It was so wrong. And I showed it to some, you know, family members, and they were all like, next thing I know, it's all over somebody's Facebook page. I'm thinking, no.
No.
It's messed. It's not right. It's very. It's really skating on the edge there.
Yeah. It took a couple of watchings for me to understand that. Because, see, what that was a mimicking of what, like, right-wingers say about the food stamp program. At the same time that it addressed the fact that, and I disagree with letting food stamp monies be spent at McDonald's.
No. It all was, that video was very, I was like, what? And, and the Al Sharpton stuff was, I couldn't even believe that Isaac did that.
What is his, Keenan Thompson that's on Saturday?
Yeah.
Because he started out on Nickelodeon, and he has grown into a brilliant parodist.
No, but that was so wrong. Along with the whole thing that first video was from Breitbart TV. I was like, Oh, God. See, now I know we're in this
loss. No, we were playing a little inside baseball, but there's one way to remedy that, and it's just to follow that, because if Isaac's going to persist with these Sunday night follies, and then, I mean, it's not just Sunday night. Isaac just finds stuff.
No.
I mean, like the story last night about the law firm in Boston offering a $10,000 a year job. Did you catch that one?
No, I missed that one.
He said you guys who passed the bar should find this especially interesting, and it's a story about a job opening at a Boston law firm that offers $10,000 a year for a recent law school graduate.
Well, I mean, the neo-feudal trend is work for free. I mean, that's the trend. And every profession now, I guess, is up for grabs. I mean, the law profession is really dubious, because now they're shipping all the sort of first-year work to India.
Yeah.
So you have spent $200,000 and you're in debt, and you can't even get a
Well, and let's bear in mind that the chances are that whoever they're shipping the job out to in India may have a damned well considerably greater command of the written English language than a whole lot of kids coming out of law schools.
Well, you know, I mean, I agree. I just am saying, though, but the law schools here, though, are still peddling their fucking schools at, you know, $200,000.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Let's understand, and maybe I'm off into the weeds again, but let's understand, for God's sakes, that law firms are legalized pyramid schemes, where the senior managing partner just sits there and draws in the bills at $500 an hour, and is paying some low-level associate way the hell down the pyramid, $60 an hour. And you know, the rest is gravy.
It's just really disturbing, because the inflated prices for these what are coming to be useless degrees, and, you know, that law degree business is just, it's too much.
Well, I mean, law degrees are handy. They're the ultimate manifestation of a generalized liberal arts kind of learning, because the law touches everything.
No, I understand that, but the thing is,
but you're going to spend $500,000 to get a job making 10?
It's a joke. That's what I mean. It's really out of whack, and the only thing they want to do is throw more debt at these poor students and people.
And here's the thing. This law firm, Gilbert and O'Brien LLP of Boston, their job posting ad read as follows: compensation is mainly based on percentage of work billed and collected. We expect an associate to earn $10,000 in compensation in the first year. That means they could earn less, Sandra.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, I don't know. I just, I have to go back and look at that story. That's too much.
And here's the kicker. They've had 32 applications.
Oh, no doubt. Wow, it's too much. The working for free is just a scourge. It's just horrifying. But listen, I have to mention this. It's completely trivial, but it just was bugging me. So, Queen Latifah did, you know, she played at a gay event. And so everybody's thinking, oh, well, you know, she's finally coming out. Homegirl, you know, put on, back on her fake, fingernails and came out talking about, oh no, she didn't come out. She thinks that she can pull a Diana Ross, who can be strictly dickly, everybody knows, and that's fine, and sing with RuPaul.
You did not just say that.
That's Diana Ross, though. Now, Queen Latifah, she ain't strictly dickly. She is gay. I seen her myself in San Francisco in 1989. It's like, stop lying. That's all I got to say.
And so, and just run back into the closet.
But no, it's just kind of like, you know, whatever, Queen Latifah. It's just like,
yeah, because some kid in some church in Indiana be singing a song about her.
Oh, no.
You caught that, right?
So she's going to hang on to dear life that she's, you know, not. And anyway, I mean, I'm glad she's playing at the gay events publicly, but I don't know. I don't understand why she keeps hanging on to the closet. But, I mean, Diana Ross, you know, she knows what side her bread is buttered on. She's cool.
Yeah.
But anyway. I just had to get that off my
head. No, that, I mean, you've just added a new phrase to the vocabulary, and it you know, it'll just be strict. Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. Have a good evening.
All right. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh God, I miss you guys. This is wonderful. Getting back at it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
How are you, my friend?
Oh, you know, I'm back. I'm weird. I was going to say I'm back and I'm happy. I'm happy to be home, but really, you know, it's the honest to God's truth. I'm weirded out. This is a weird freaking place.
Yeah, it's only going to get better one way, you know. That's the way we got to do it. A couple things, real quick, if I may, so I don't forget them. You know, you guys got to watch the PBS Frontline regarding Yemen. You got to see what they're talking about when they talk about these drone strikes. You got to see. All right? This is not, you know, and let's also not forget, take into context, and the reason I'm kind of a little bit heated on this is it's awesome that liberals pay attention and hold him accountable, but, you know, giving too much attention to this or too much rage of it really gives the other side way too much ammunition. Okay, you gotta take into context, when Bush went into Afghanistan, which I was against, but it's there, the eggs are cracked, the omelet is made, okay, these people are now sitting here taking over towns in Yemen, raising flags, and that's their last mistake, really, if you look at it. That's the same thing we're having with the Tamil Tigers, it's the same thing we're having, and the minute they're organized, they're done, okay, but you gotta get them out of there. You can't let them take over these countries one by one by one by one by one. And I hate to say this, but they're now an army. You know, they're over there, you know, back to subjugating women in Yemen. They're sitting there cutting off hands in villages for stealing a, you know, walnut or a chest, you know, whatever, the cashew, whatever. You know, this is the kinds of things that are happening now. And I kind of have to applaud President Obama for what he's doing with these drones. It's a lot better than going in there with B-52s. It's a lot better than going in there with Marines and having 100+ thousand people and having, you know, we're talking about, and I'm going to give, you know, 20% plus, that 20% of the casualties from these drone strikes are civilians. 20% plus, and that's 900. 900 is not more than 180,000. And that's direct causes that we did by being in Iraq. Who knows how many in Afghanistan? It's probably about...
Well, I remember the Johns Hopkins study, Albert, from... October 2004, that we, you know, by 2004, we were at 1 million dead civilians.
It's still there. I mean, they keep doing that year after year. That's the Lancet, the British Lancet, and they keep doing it. And that's, you know, that's not direct deaths, but that's because we were there to begin with. You know, just the fact that we blew up their water probe, you know, and when he's not doing that, he's sitting here, and you know what? That guy ain't an American citizen, that guy, that Khalid, blah, blah, blah. What's he doing over there? What are you doing in Nazi Germany? You're not an American citizen. You go to Nazi Germany, World War II. I hate to say it, but, I mean, come on. Let's be a little context. Because all of a sudden, this argument of us really, you know, Jeremy Scahill and all these guys paying attention to this. And I'm glad they pay attention to it. It makes me proud to be a liberal. I want to know. But we also blow it out of proportion. It is not 100,000. It is not anywhere near. It is a rounding error. And I hate to be crass and what have you. These are human beings, okay? But they call him Hitler. I argue with people that call him Hitler. And people then reflect that. And when they say things like this, okay, which is, of course, obviously a Godwin's law violation, but you're talking about people that don't care about Godwin's law. They don't care about any kind of semblance of, you know, you got commercials with Walker sitting here showing hunters, and if Barrett gets elected, boop, the gun disappears from the hunter's hand. Your Second Amendment's your gun.
Oh, there's no getting around the validity of your point, Albert. I mean, you talk about the Hitler reference. Just a couple of days ago, the Daily Advertiser. Now, this is a newspaper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't just some little newspaper run by some cranky little dude in central Louisiana. It is a part of the Gannett Empire, which includes a whole bunch of newspapers. The Daily Advertiser serves central Louisiana, and they accepted for publication and published, Albert, a paid advertisement by an organization called Agenda 21 Louisiana, Agenda21LA.com. They're having a rally in Lafayette. You have to say it like that in Louisiana, Lafayette. Jack can probably back me up on this. Lafayette. And the advertisement shows a photograph of a priest being shot by a firing squad, and he's all dressed. He's wearing his priest dress, and his little priest beanie, and he's got his little priest scarf, and he's got his hands held together in front of him, in front of a wall, and he's being taken down by a firing squad in 1927 in Mexico. This historical photo depicts Father Francisco Vera, a Catholic priest from the town of Jalisco, Mexico, standing before a firing squad in 1927. Father Vera was arrested and executed for secretly celebrating Mass. And let's see. America is under siege by the same evil Obama and Democrats as history shows over and over. See the stunning expose documentary to be educated and empowered. Agenda, Grinding America Down, Agenda Document, yada, 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 available online or from us.
Yep.
We must learn from it or we were doomed to repeat it. On and on and on, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
The basic
killer.
Mm-hmm. Newspaper runs ads suggesting President Obama and Democrats want to murder Christians.
Yep. And we're over here, really, I mean, we're sitting over here. You know, I mean, and rightfully so. We should be paying attention to it, but let's not forget who's on the other side. Okay? There is no low they won't go. They will try to pretend because Jeremy Scahill uses the freaking word countless to refer to, it's hard to count, not to refer to Hitler's countless deaths, and that's exact. I mean, and in that kind of mind, okay, that, you know, if there weren't people out here that were sitting here, you know, we're like firemen. We literally are. You know, not everybody's going to get it, and I hope to think that we're actually like the booms for an oil spill. But this stuff spreads. This stuff becomes common, you know, to people who aren't maybe real, they don't really pay attention, they don't really look, they don't really know the history.
Oh, look, Albert, I was in Washington, D.C. for the Affordable Care Act arguments, and I saw more than one great big poster-sized photographs of Barack Obama with the Charlie Chaplin mustache on him.
Okay, now, I understand. Anytime we're liberals, I don't want to see families getting killed. I don't. I definitely don't. But what should he do? Ignore it? Because one way or another, civilians are going to die. They always do. It can't be stopped. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. We try to minimize it. I understand. I want to minimize it. But no matter what, either either you let these people fester, and what do they start doing again? Right? Maybe this time they crash into my pizzeria. Maybe this time they actually do something like crash into Indian River, the nuclear power plant. Let's say they do that. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? And how many civilians are going to be killed for that? No, I'm not trying. I mean, it's such a...
No, it's an it is an intractable problem.
But this is exactly where we are. And it just... And I hear this kind of stuff, and then all the next thing you know, Agenda 21. Have you read the documents for Agenda 21? No, but, you know, Alex Jones read it for me. Okay, so you didn't read... Have you ever read the United Nations Charter on Human Rights? Have you ever read it?
No, that's a communist document. I don't read communist things.
It's everything our Constitution is, and then some, without the guns, but there's technically some sort of rationale behind that. They have some rights in there, because there's like 21 amendments to it. It was written by us. It's how, I mean, you people, do you even know what Agenda 21 is?
Well, yeah, our side does, but no, the others, it's a plan
for one world government, and it'll bring on the Antichrist, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, they want to protect bison more. It's like, you know, yeah, and this is the thing, you're bison. Go look, Wikipedia right now, American bison, and go look at its historic range. And then go look, you know, Wikipedia, you know, the most fertile land on the earth. And then take those two maps and look at them. It's not a coinkydink that some of the most fertile land on earth happens to be right in the breadbasket where the United States grows food for the entire world. Okay? Now, this is some of the best soil on the planet, and it was been enriched by tens and tens of thousands of years of undulate, giant herds that you could see from space, feeding and nurturing this microorganism, allowing them to break down minerals and feed the plants, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, until we have what we have in the middle of this country, you know, whatever it is. You know, you got, yeah, volcanic ash, but that gets broken down by bacteria. And, you know, and so it's this beautiful soil, and now you look at this proportion of bison. It's not even pimples. It's not even freckles.
It ain't visible from space.
It's not visible from space, no sir. And you know, I don't know about you, but you have to, anytime we're looking at human beings, you know we're talking, we're always thinking ahead. We gotta think about the long-term viability of our species. Now, nobody's saying nothing about population control, we're just talking about population spread. Now, that doesn't mean everyone's gonna be going to four cities. Shut up. It just means you're not going to keep sitting there in you know, the areas of the country where there's nothing. You're not going to keep sitting there making these giant suburban sprawls. You're going to allow corridors for these animals to move through. Same reason we don't, you know, the same reason we got to take care of the ocean. Same reason we got to do the same reason why wolves are there. Wolves are there for an invite.
No, it's about using our brains for a change.
Yeah.
I mean, consider this business out of North Carolina. Did you see this, Albert? I mean, this was one of those real run screaming into the night moments.
Okay.
The Republicans in the state of North Carolina are advocating for they've put forward a bill that would mandate that the Division of Coastal Management, you know, those parts of North Carolina that happen to sit next to the Atlantic Ocean, you know, where we're going to have some sea level rise here, and it's been rising, it's going to keep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the North Carolina Republicans have a bill out that says the rates of increase in sea level, quote, shall only be determined using historical data, and these data shall be limited to the time period following the year 1900. Rates of sea level rise may be extrapolated linearly to estimate future rates of rise, but shall not include scenarios of accelerated rates of sea level rise. We ain't going to use no damn science to predict whether or not the sea levels are going to swamp freaking Wilmington.
Did they have scuba gear on in the office that they were sitting in? Let them. That's where they're going to be. They're going to be sitting there with scuba gear. There ain't no goddamn water rays and whatever. That's how stupid these people are.
You know, they're saying, a meter is a meter, and it's a little more than a yard, and it doesn't look like a hell of a lot sitting here next to you. But a 1 meter sea level rise means a shitload for coastal communities, coastal cities that were plopped right on top of, you know, the ocean.
Yeah.
And so a science panel in North Carolina, Albert, and they reported that a 1 meter rise is likely by 2100. And that's a modest estimate. Some folks think it could be as much as 7 feet. And the response of the Republican Party in North Carolina was to say, we ain't going to use no science even if the water's up to our damn necks. Because that man-made global warming is a Jim Inhofe done told us. It's a big old hoax to scare folks while they're drowning.
Yep, and these are the same people that are freaking out. I don't know if you saw this one. You probably didn't. But, you know, the EPA is using drones. Oh, my God, Obama's EPA is using drones in America right over the breadbasket of Nebraska and Iowa. Oh, man, he's coming. He and those drones are watching the farmers. They got no privacy left. They're going to start shooting Hellfire missiles on them, right? No, they're out there watching CAFOs, making sure the CAFOs aren't, dumping their drones.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, Albert. I would be tickled damn pink if the Obama administration would fly some damn drones with some cameras attached to them over some mountaintop removal sites and take him some damn pictures. Because he has still not seen one.
Well, they can't even, they can't even.
Because if you've seen a mountaintop removal picture, you don't give 90 million, you don't praise the Export-Import Bank giving $90 million to a coal exporter to send some more Appalachia to two power plants in India and South Africa at the expense of the lungs of unborn hillbilly babies.
I hear you, bro.
Sorry, ranting. My bad.
No, it's a big mess. It's a giant mess. But,
not to revisit what I was talking about toward the end of last night's program, but Jesus criminy, I sent you that story about Germany passing 50% and solar creating the electricity that would be generated by 20 nuclear reactors in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the next to last day that I was there, we stopped and visited these folks west of Cologne who were wonderful, wonderful hosts and a pleasure to talk to. And they took me and broke my heart.
What, about the ceasing of the subsidies?
No, the strip mine they showed me in Germany, where they're going 1,400 feet into the earth to scrape out a layer of lignite that has slightly more thermal capacity than effing peat. And they're doing it on a huge square kilometer basis, visible from space. And they're going to expand, they couldn't get a new permit to do it, so the filthy coal whores over there, a corporation by the name of RWE, that owns the power plant you can see pumping choking filth into the air on the distant horizon to the west, and they couldn't get a permit for a new pit, so they're just expanding the old one, and they have already begun depopulating and resettling a series of 5,000-year-old villages. So, you know what they say? When it's done being a filthy coal pit in 2045, you know what they're going to do, Albert? They're going to turn it into Germany's second-largest lake, and there will be sailboats.
Yay!
Sailing on toxins. Sailing on the little children splashing around in the poison.
It's a mess.
I mean, I saw toddlers in Germany who will be adults, the parents of teenagers, who will be splashing around in that filthy lake in 2045. You know, Germany's electric power production is down to like 26%. Coal is 26% of German electricity production. And there's lots of room left for wind turbines and tons of, and I mean, there are still some unsolarized roofs out there, Albert.
I bet. It's a big job. But what are they're using this lignite for electricity?
Yes.
Wow. You know?
I mean, it's little more than carboniferous mud.
That's some silly stuff. I mean, I think you'd be better off maybe invest or looking at some generation for nuclear power plants, but...
No, because in the wake of Fukushima, they ditched that, too. It's only 20...
One. I know.
They can do it with wind and solar. I mean, remember that article from this winter where they were sending out memos to Germans to please turn their damn lights on?
true.
Because they had too much sustainable, renewable energy on hand?
They were paying them. They paid them a penny. We gave them a whole penny. And that's fine. I'll take it, you know.
Hey, you know, I'm a geek. I still stop and pick up pennies that I see laying heads up on the sidewalk. I mean, there is superstition involved.
Yeah, I'll just take a little bit of break. I mean, but you know, even in this country here, you know, I remember a few years back when I was starting my solar power, and how it would take, you know, X amount of years, paying, you know, with five. Well, you know, now they have a 4.8 kilowatt system with the inverter grid tie.
And that's you know, that's the next step is, you know, smart grid 2.0. That's the answer. That's where the research needs to be happening, not on clean coal technology. I'm looking at an email right now that just came in from one of the brilliant staffers at Coal River Mountain Watch. West Virginia coal production is 2.6% of the U.S. energy supply, but there's a hell of a lot more coal coming out of West Virginia than that, and guess what it's doing? It's getting on a boat and going to power plants in South Africa and India and steel mills in Russia and India and China.
It's, you know, it's also done by people who don't understand what we were talking about with the bison in the soil or the, you know, coconut.
Yeah, and they live in their limited lives, Albert, and you remember when George Bush said history didn't matter because we're all going to be dead?
Wouldn't it be nice to get, see, well, now they got them hearts. The Israelis, they're building those hearts.
But I'm one of those nerds that, you know, nobody here is going to live to be 1,000. But I'm one of those nerds who wants to, even if nobody knows, I maybe we'll pass it down through the family like you'll pass it down through yours, Albert. That we were talking about this vision, this possible future, this good thing for humanity. That's right on the doorstep, and that we had the vision to say that this is a brilliant human future worth working for.
We're getting there. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Because these other people, the coal people and the hydrocarbon energy people have no vision whatsoever. It's not that they have no vision for 1,000 years or 500 years from now. I were to say they have no damn vision for 25 years from now. The only thing they can think about is what kind of share dividend they're going to get in the next damn quarter.
Yep, right now. Go in, and that's the other thing about that. I told about the front line to watch Yemen and watch the front line regarding Wall Street.
Oh, I love
that. Four-part series on that. Four-part, 4 hours. Hey, you know how Frontline does it. They go deep.
Oh, yeah.
And they slide. You know, Frontline don't mess around.
Nope.
And, you know, but I tell you about this voting crap. So I get up and I can do my voting. Because I got to get my voting done, drag the wife down. As I'm looking, I look over my neighbor and I say, Julius, don't forget to vote. As soon as I leave, he gets in his car. I see him leaving as I'm coming in. You know, as I'm going out, I see him coming in. Another buddy of mine, tell him to vote. We're getting, as we're driving back from our medical appointment with Renee, who's growing like forget it. She's eating me out of house and home. It's ridiculous. She doesn't stop eating. She's wearing her teeth down. She's going to be like an elephant pretty soon. Or just the whole new set's going to have to come
dude,
up.
Dude, you're not working on marital harmony there, okay? I mean, we'll just keep this between us and the Horn family.
I tell her. She knows. It's funny. It's how we love each other. It's, you know. East Coast. But anyway, so, you know, we sit here and there's people on the side of the street. You know, I'll tell you, Walker was paying people. He was paying people $500 to have these big yard signs in. But I'll tell you right now, today, there are far more kick his ass out. There are far more, you know, send Walker walking. There's all kinds of that stuff. And you know what also makes me laugh about this whole Walker shit? Walker. Moving Wisconsin forward. But I thought forward was Mao and kind of Nazis and Stalin, wasn't it? Yeah, we're moving forward, aren't we? Yeah. He wants to turn this state into a right-to-work state. So, I don't know. We're going to see. I think turnout's been pretty decent. Everyone I've talked to thus far has voted and been there and done that. And
well, you know, the one thing that's disturbing out of this is the potential thousands upon thousands of college students in Wisconsin who will be forbidden from voting today.
Yeah, they did have a disturbing wall when you walked in there, and it was just a big wall. Are you legal to vote? Blah, 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 blah. I didn't even look at it, because I am legal to vote. And you know what? I'm voting. You're not stopping me. No, I'm not using that machine. Give me a piece of paper. And thank you very much. And
yeah, we're 22. We are 22 minutes from polls closing. So I'm sure that they'll declare the election by 9:01 p.m.
Well, you know, and I hope his ass is out of there. He has been. It's been ridiculous, the amount of money that he spends, and it would sure be nice to see it fail. It would sure be nice to see it all. Actually, it's kind of actually disturbing because now I have all these cardboard things in my garbage can because, you know, they don't stop sending 5, 6, 17 tons of this shit every day. You know, it's really ridiculous how much every piece of propaganda you can imagine. I should just frame it, but it makes me sick, so I throw it away. But I should, you know, keep it, but, you know, it just makes me so sick. When they call, I see Republican hang up. I don't even talk to them people. I'm not going to give them the satisfaction. I'm going to let them keep them in the dark. I'm not going to tell them who I'm voting for. Get out of here. Keep you in the dark, you bastard, scumbag, freaking pig-licking bastards. I can't stand these people. I'm so over these people. Man, you know, they're taking our hunting rifles. I'll just... You know, these people holding us back, these people that don't understand this fundamental connection we have to this planet. I don't know what they're doing here. You know, they're so afraid of everything. They're afraid of the UN. They're afraid of Agenda 21. They're afraid of banks. They're afraid of this. They're afraid of that. You know what? Just kill yourself. You're done. Just get out of here. You guys are not helping. You're not doing. What are you going to do? What are you? You want to arm revolution against the government? They want to shoot down the drones, Bob. You know, you should let them know. You know, you do $1,000 to federal property, over $1,000 is 10 years. So, enjoy. Have fun. They have plenty of room for you, and they'll build more, so go ahead and shoot some drones.
Oh, I remember a story out of my own past. I didn't do this, I just knew people who were involved. But I remember a story of, some badasses up the holler who saw one of the marijuana interdiction helicopters flying overhead, and they didn't shoot. They just ran into the house and run back out with their shooting guns in their hands.
Mm.
And the on-the-ground police were in their yard before the helicopter flew away. And they were tried, and, it was just a mess.
Yeah, but that's, a, you know, these over-enlarged...
Yeah, by all means, bring out the double-barreled 12-gauge... And take a pot shot with some number four shot at a drone at 10,000 feet.
Well, you go ahead and shoot at them, and then, you know, why? Because they're monitoring methane emissions, sulfur dioxide emissions. Oh, your privacy. Oh, your privacy. What are you worried about your privacy? If you're on film and you go to the bank, you're on film here, who's watching it? Nobody. Nobody's watching that.
Well, I mean, the Uniblab 10,000 in the basement of the, National Security Administration is using, the high-powered software to make sure that you're, you know, not a Muslim or something.
Yeah, really what it kind of boils down to, I look at it, if my kid goes missing on 6th Street, and there's cameras there, and they see who picked her up, then they follow along wherever that person went. Maybe I get my kid back. Maybe it doesn't become in some shallow grave somewhere. You know, and I'm not trying to say, oh, those who sacrifice, shut up. Who's sacrificing what? What, cameras are sacrificing liberty? How does it sacrifice your liberty?
Well, and that, you know, that Albert, that ties into my argument about life in empire.
Mm.
Everybody, are you using the internet? Guess what?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, come on. There's too much information.
And that's not to say to lay down and just roll over and give up our civil liberties. But if you've got any kind of historical perspective on this. I mean, like I said, I've said it a million times. Go back and read Justice Brennan's dissent in U.S. v. Leon, okay? That thing was decided in the late 80s, early 90s. So, and that was creating a good faith exception for a bunch of cops who busted into the wrong house. And guess what? It was a blatant Fourth Amendment violation. And only Justice Brennan and a minority of the court said there was anything wrong with it. Rehnquist and the other thugs at the time said, oh, you know what, mistakes happen, and the cops have to be given leeway to make mistakes. Yeah, so what if there are mistakes laying in a pool of blood somewhere? The assault, and again, this is not an excuse to lay down and say, oh, well, but the assault has been going on a long time before January the 21st, 2000, and 9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is a function not of an individual man, but of an individual evolving administrative proto-fascist empirical state.
Mm-hmm.
This is fascism. Empire and fascism go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like, I know for a fact that there were hillbillies here in rural West Virginia who shot at the first airplane they saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or stood there in terrified wonder. When the telephone was first introduced, they about jumped out of their skin the first time it rang. And I'm talking about my own ancestors, so I'm not making fun of them. I'm not making generic fun. I had a grandmother who could tell me about these things. And a national security state that does creepy shit like Alabama's immigration law. Yeah. Want no part of it. And there are places that handle it better than we do. But the other side of this, Albert, is to say, how would we react if fill in the blank country was flying unmanned aircraft over? The old Soviet Union, we'd say, oh, they're flying unmanned aircraft over there. Well, of course they are, because they're a communist dictatorship, authoritarian, totalitarian state, and that's what they do. But we don't dare to say that about ourselves, right?
Well, we do. But at the same time, you know, heck, I mean, God, it's such a mess.
I don't think that we can engage in the struggle unless we understand the nature of what we're struggling against.
Well,
monitoring those methane emissions, you know what I'd rather have? I'd rather have a really, really good, fully funded, well-staffed USDA that had the people to put on the ground to walk up to those CAFOs and say, I'm going to walk around with an on-the-ground methane monitor, and I'm going to bust your ass and shut you down if it's over the limit. But that is a failure of the right-wing assault on the very idea of government. And it's been disassembled over the course of a generation. No sooner did it get up and running than they started taking it apart.
Yep.
You know, I would like to have enough people working for the USDA to make sure that we don't have another outbreak of goddamn salmonella in the peanut butter.
Well, we certainly can do that, but extra tools are extra tools.
And they call, but you know, the reason we don't do that is it gets in the way of business.
Well,
you know, it gets in the priority. You know, because remember George Bush told us that you know, everything. Government regulations don't work. What we've got to have is voluntary compliance.
Mm-hmm. And this is why we got to keep holding that. Yeah, blame Bush. Yes, blame Bush. Yeah, blame him. Of course we have to blame him. Of course. I still blame him because he did it. And that's who did it. He's the one that did it. He's the one that killed a million people or was responsible for the deaths of up to...
He's the one. He and Cheney and the rest of the filthy lot are the ones who should be standing in a dock at The Hague. The next name called after what's-his-name from Liberia's case was over, it should have been, next case, People of the Earth versus George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, the Colin Powell, Condi Rice, the Jason Bibby, John Yoo, Don Rumsfeld, the Paul Wolfowitz. That's what should have happened in a just world.
Mm-hmm. Not yet. That's why we want them to live for a while.
Yeah. Hey, Albert, I got to roll. I'm going to try to hit a few more blinking ones. Good to hear from you, brother.
All right, brother. Be good, man.
All right.
Be good.
Bye now. All right. A little pushback coming toward what Albert had to offer. Andy in California saying, where's the due process of law guaranteed by our Constitution? Anwar al-Awlaki, where's the trial, even in absentia, for an American citizen? He goes on and he says, from 1,000 to 1,500 innocent women and children have been killed by the drones, not to mention the assassination of U.S. citizens Anwar al-Awlaki and his 16-year-old son. He says, Howard has a problem. He won't admit that Mr. Obama is a war criminal and a murderer because he's a Democrat. I don't buy the war criminal thing. I buy the administrator of a proto-fascist empire state And in that case, everybody who becomes the president of the United States is to one degree or another going to become a war criminal. And I do see a difference between 1,500 dead and a million dead. But the problem is, if you put yourself in the shoes of the mother of one of those dead, it doesn't matter if it's a million or 1,500. Because it all comes to grief and comes to heartache. But this, I honest to God, don't know what the answer is. It would be nice for the answer to be, let's not do this. You know, it's the old why are you shooting, why are you here argument. But of course, the people that the drones are shooting at are first and foremost religiously insane. Can we please remember that? Andy reminds me there is some secular virtue in wanting freedom of religion. He refers to the movie The Greater Glory. There is some secular virtue in wanting freedom of religion, and even some atheists take up the cause of freedom of expression. Some horrific torture scenes in the film, along with great acts of bravery against insurmountable odds against the Mexican federales. I do not oppose freedom of religion. I wholeheartedly support it. But freedom of religion also means the freedom to be left the hell alone and not have these people trying to make their religion our public policy. And Mr. Obama is not out there itching to shoot him up some Catholics, like that crazy-ass ad in that newspaper offered. Let's get some more calls in. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program. Maybe not. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, what's up? What's happening, Kevin?
Oh, not much, not much. Glad to hear you back on the radio, doing your thing. Wish I could have been with you in Germany. That sounded like a good time, at least the part that wasn't busy.
It was a fascinating education, Kevin. It truly was.
Hey, before I forget, you mentioned the ache thing. What is that again?
Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. Will impose a moratorium on new permits for mountaintop removal in Appalachia pending an entire, fully funded, long-term study of the health impacts that are to find out why mountaintop removal is poisoning and killing people.
Yep. I came in on the second hour and just heard you mention that. Is that in the form of a bill yet? Or?
It is a bill that will be introduced in about 2 weeks' time, we expect.
Oh, very good. Keep us updated on that.
And we need co-sponsors. We need real activism out there by people calling their members of Congress and telling them about it and telling them that they know that they have received a Dear Colleague letter and they expect to find out that they have signed on or there will be hell to pay in November.
Yep.
Or maybe leave off the hell to pay part. Just please, for the sake of Appalachia, sign on to this thing.
Exactly. Tell them the hell to pay closer to November, and they're more likely to pay attention to that part of it. So, hey, I wanted to ask, too, yesterday you were talking about the euro, and right about the time you said how much a euro cost in American money, my volume went down, and I never did understand what that said.
I think I laid out something like 65, 70 bucks for all those meds and the doctor visit.
Man, so how much, roughly, how much per med did that come out to?
I mean, if you break it out, 90-day supply of each worked out, about $15 a script.
That's not bad at all, particularly for some of the...
For some of the more expensive stuff especially, yeah. I mean, you can go to a lot of these businesses... have like $5 a month formularies for generics, and that's competitive, but it was massively different to sit there and be told how much it would be at any pharmacy I walked to and went to in the country. Didn't matter. Berlin, Hamburg, Frankfurt, Stuttgart, Munich, no difference. And that's, that's price, that's price management. That's a proactive government acting to prevent profiteering and price gouging on the agony, misery, and illness of its citizens, which we largely ain't got here.
that we call democratic socialism an evil in this country, and people use it like it's some great evil. I don't know how many people remember, but back in the 1970s, President Nixon actually froze the prices on gas during that first gas crisis. And I doubt you could get Obama to even think about doing something like that, you know, because there's so much of an outcry for the quote-unquote free market.
Yeah, that's violating our free market principles of Christianity.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, I hate to say it, but you're breaking up a little bit. I hope we will talk soon, all right?
Okay, Bob. Thanks for letting me know that.
Oh, no trouble at all. We'll talk at further length later. All right, bye now. And let's see if we can get one more call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
In case it's not too late, I just wanted to remind people that the Transit of Venus is happening today. And it's on right now, and you can go to NASA's website. Brandon was nice enough to put it up on the chat room. And you can watch it live.
Oh, excellent.
But you have, you know, professional equipment without burning your eyes out of your sockets.
You know, that's a real bonus, not having your retinas get cooked.
Also, just to be quick about it, you had a caller call in or a writer write in and say he heard a coal executive talking about how he could get 370 kilotons of coal out of Mexico and about 75 of...
Yeah, I forget what... No, actually, it was a personal friend of mine, but...
I worked out the math on that for a Panamax ship and shipping it down through Guaymas, Mexico, which is the new terminal they're going to be using down there, and moving it up to Shanghai... The rail shipment is honestly a real killer for their thing. The less shipment by rail you can do, the better. It's dirt cheap to ship it by sea. Anyways, it looks like for the, 370 kilotons out of Mexico and the 75 kilotons out of New Orleans, they're within about 1% of each other cost-wise, just because they save so much on the rail when they move it from one to the other.
Yeah, and you gotta remember that a whole bunch of Appalachian coal moves out of Baltimore and out of Norfolk.
They'd actually be better to ship it out of Georgia. Just looking at these shipping rates, it's just ridiculous.
The ultimate point, Chris, is that if we stop burning coal for electricity here tomorrow, they're still going to keep tormenting various and sundry regions of this country because, well, you know, among other things, the Obama administration is supporting the export of coal to other countries, the export of our health, our well-being, the safety of our children.
It's no joke. It's $27 million out of Mexico, and you'll make about $5 million, $5.5 million off of the stuff in New Orleans for a total of $32 million for the entire allotment. Shanghai is, however, finding that the coal from Mongolia is proving far cheaper than stuff from Australia or even.
Oh, yeah, and that's why Peabody opened up the largest open-pit strip mine in the world there, and it's causing no small amount of consternation. Chris, I hate to say it, but I got to get out of here, but I'm glad I got to you. Hope we'll talk more soon.
Look for allies in Mongolia. Cheers.
Indeed. Bye now. And we are looking for, and we are making allies all over the world because this is a struggle that is global. And what harms me harms others, and what harms others harms me. It seems simple, but you'd be surprised how hard it is for people to get their heads around it. Well, it's time to get out of here. A wonderful Tuesday evening. Thank you very much. And tomorrow we'll be back at it again. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you enjoyed it this evening. Thanks. Go out to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to those of you as well who contributed to help see us through Dr. John's challenge was met and then some. Thanks very much for making that challenge, Dr. John. And thank you to all of you who responded. We are in a hole, and I'm going to try to see if we can't make sure we've got the toll-free still tomorrow night. We'll know if we got to the number or not when we start the show. Again, happy birthday to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thank you to our other chat room moderator, Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And remember, go to stoptheache.org to learn more about the Appalachian Community Health Act. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.